R-K-E-Y.
How about this? There's a stopgap on the hill, but it's a mere drop in the bucket. More like passing the buck, if you will. The Senate will vote to send to the president a Republican measure that will cut $4 billion in spending in the next 2 weeks. And it'll just keep the government open for 2 weeks, pretty much is what that's all about. So we continue the quest to balance a budget. How ridiculous is all that? Kate Delaney, America Tonight, the name of this show, Coast to Coast, all those nooks and crannies in between, my favorite, the flyover states, and to all of you listening in other parts of the world, we appreciate you. Thanks. This overnight highway is getting crowded, and we're bumper to bumper. And I'll tell you what, we feel like we zig and zag all over the place. That's the way we like to do it, and hopefully you enjoy the ride as well. Remember, you can always throw in your 2 cents at 800-259-5791. So how about it, the budget? A couple of senators and a congressman are going to weigh in. Senator Coburn, Senator McConnell, you're about to hear. Senator Reid and Congressman Cantor, listen.
This confirms what every American already knew about the federal government. It's absolutely out of control. This is an indictment of Congress, both run by Republicans and Democrats, and by administrations, both Republican and Democrat, not leading.
What we want to do is reduce government spending this year. The worst way to run the government is to spend $1.5 trillion more this year than we're taking in. We've added $3 trillion to the debt in the last, since the beginning of the Obama administration, while we've lost 3 million jobs. I think you could argue pretty persuasively that's the worst way to run the government, and we want to stop that.
We feel we're in a good position. I'm hopeful that we can work something out with the Republicans to get this done.
The federal government currently spends billions of taxpayer dollars each year on overlapping and duplicative programs. 82 programs that try to deal with teacher quality, 47 job training programs, 56 different programs aimed at helping the American people understand their finances.
All right, I would agree with Cantor there. Ridiculous, the lap and the overlay in various programs in the government. I've said that before. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago a conversation I had with somebody new in the IRS that was saying how they should just do an audit and they could probably lop off a big chunk of what ails our government that is just refuses to cut the spending because there were so much in the way of jobs that were just repeating themselves. And sure enough, in his way, he spells it out. But if they dug deep enough, if they really drilled, they would find that, I guess we really didn't need to have three people doing the same thing. We shouldn't have hired them in the first place. It doesn't make any sense. In the meantime, the Wisconsin governor, while he watches what happens to the federal government, is vowing some pretty fat or deep cuts for schools. Look out. The axe is swinging. It's the familiar scene. You still have people that are protesting, and you still have the cops that are lined up around the Capitol, but everything's all calm and peaceful as far as any kind of demonstrations are concerned. The governor is ramping up, though, on his full budget. He presented it, and it's a plan that smacks $1 billion in money to public schools and local government, but the key thing is that the taxpayers want to hear it avoids any tax or fee increases. How about that? So the cuts could be paid for in large part by, I think you know the answer to this, what has the debate been over? Forcing employees to pay more for their pension and health care benefits. But that idea has wreaked havoc across the country and stirred a massive talk show and national debate over public sector unions and what's fair and what's foul. See, here's the thing. At this point, if you're a teacher, honestly, in this situation, at some point, I mean, is it better to pay more into the pension and to lose what rights you had as far as collective bargaining is concerned, or keep the gig? And when you look around the country and you see all the teachers that are losing their jobs, boy, they've got to think hard about this. You know, at this point, what the governor is saying, look, this is a reform budget, period. It's about getting Wisconsin working. And we need a balanced budget. If we don't have a balanced budget, we're screwed in this environment. We've got to do this. So you still have tens of thousands of demonstrators who say that's a bunch of nonsense in the last 3 weeks, and you might have kind of high tensions, and there's lots of security, but there have not been any problems with this. It's been wild to see this thing continue. 3 weeks is a very long time. What the opposition to Walker, the people opposed, are saying is, look, the entire burden of the budget shortfall is on the kids' shoulders, and the people who need health care and long-term care are going to be screwed up in this whole thing. So what the deal is it's an economic necessity that's being shoved down their throats, that it's not about the people. I think that this standoff continues until they get those Democrats back, and they're still not back. So 14 are missing in action, as they say. Speaking of missing in action, Robert Gates, the Secretary of Defense, talked about the Middle East and what's happening with Al-Qaeda lately.
The revolutions in Tunisia and in Egypt, and the protests elsewhere that are leading to reforms in a number of governments, I think are an extraordinary setback for Al-Qaeda.
All right, that's interesting. Is it really a setback for Al-Qaeda, or are they just laying in the weeds waiting to make a move? Because there's this assumption that, okay, you're having these people that are protesting, and they want some kind of a democracy. But are they going to get a democracy? They're going to have elections. What kind of government is going to be formed in Tunisia and in Egypt, ultimately in Libya, and who knows where else it crops up in the Middle East, looking at the way it's exploding? There's an assumption that this is the direction these countries are taking, but that assumption could be off. What you have here is really a youth revolt. Certainly in Egypt that was the case, and in Tunisia, not that there weren't older people in the crowds, but you have a population in all those areas where the unemployed are 25 and younger, and that's part of the deal. That's part of the revolt. We don't want to take this anymore, and we're more than disenfranchised at this point. You're taking all the money, and we want some of the money. You got to help your country. You got to help your people. And that's why they're, you know, booting out the dictators, Mubarak, and whether or not Gaddafi gets the heave-ho, because still his forces are starting to retake some of the towns that were swacked near the capital. The rebels couldn't keep up against the amount of firepower that Gaddafi's guys had. I don't think this ends anytime soon. Hang with us.
Men, take control of your prostate health without the risk of nasty side effects with Prostate Secure. Early detection, regular prostate exams, and PSA tests are a must for men over 40. Listen, if you have symptoms of an enlarged prostate but don't want to take a drug with possible nasty side effects, or if you're over 40, then use Prostate Secure, a natural dietary supplement for men. Prostate Secure is a scientifically formulated blend of clinically significant amounts of natural ingredients. It brings together the most powerful plant sterols like beta-sitosterol,
resveratrol, and saw palmetto, along with antioxidants such as vitamin D3, resveratrol, and lycopene to support good prostate health, proper urinary flow, function, and more. Check out ProstateSecure.com. Order online and save 10% with promo code SAVE10 or call 1-800-239-9432. That's 800-239-9432. Or visit ProstateSecure.com. Take control of your prostate health naturally with Prostate Secure.
I'm Roger Rao at Midas Resources. If you are going through a financial roller coaster because of your investment in stocks, bonds, and other paper assets, perhaps you're ready for a change. You have an opportunity to change your financial security. Get the stability and peace of mind you deserve by investing in precious metals. Gold and silver have been a form of wealth protection for over 5,000 years all over the world. If you have seen your hard-earned money lose value because of inflation, sliding dollar, etc., it's time you stop the bleeding. The answer to your problems is simple. Gold and silver. Silver will protect your assets and your purchasing power, physical possession of precious metals, IRA rollover, etc. Call me, Roger Rao, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 178. Take action today when we are still accepting paper dollars for gold and silver. Ready for a change? Call Roger Rao at 1-800-686-2237, extension 178. Again, it's 1-800-686-2237, extension 178.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver. That's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver. UtopiaSilver.com or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com. Taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
Games, jobs, and a million other things. People have so many excuses as to not having time to spend with their kids. What has happened to the family? I've seen it with my friends. I hate to say it. They are good parents. They try to be good parents, but the one thing that they can't seem to give their kids is time. Our next guest has come up with a brilliant, I think, brilliant way for families to reconnect. His name is Shane Wilson. I'm going to send you even to the website for further explanation because it spells it all out for you. It's about fishing, baby. I love fishing anyway, right? So go to fishingsfuture.com. Shane, thanks for popping on ATM with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Kate. We're honored to be here.
Fishing. I do. I love fishing, and I think it is a way to spend time away from everything. There's something about fishing when you're in a boat or you're on the bank somewhere or you're at the end of a dock. Am I right about that? Is that part of why you chose fishing?
Well, Kate, there's something about fishing, I have to say. There's the thing that I like about fishing the most is you don't have to be any good to catch fish. You can be a beginner or a professional. And you're going to catch fish if you have patience.
There you go. So that's the key to it. But is what made you, what was it in your head that made you decide, first of all, let's roll back a little bit. What made you start the organization? What made you come up with the idea that, okay, I'm jumping into this? Because you didn't have to jump into this. You have your own family. You could focus on your own family. What made you decide to do this?
Well, for the last 11 years, I've been the administrator for the alternative program for a local school district. I'm an educator. And I found out there's a lot of parents that just don't know how to interact with their children. There's a lot more broken homes than there used to be, and I needed to put parents back in the lives of kids, and fishing is the avenue that I chose.
Yeah, and when you first decided to do this, what did your friends tell you?
They thought I was a little bit crazy. They said, it's a great idea. I don't know how you're going to do it. And at the time, I didn't know either, and I still don't. But we've been doing it since 2004, and I'm still pushing.
Okay, and so how does somebody, like let's say somebody's listening to this and saying, wow, this is such a great idea. How can I get involved in this? How can I get started in this? What can people do? Obviously, they can go to your website.
Well, that's a good start. It's fishingsfuture.org. If you go to the .com, it'll still roll over. But they can go to the website and they can look. They can volunteer. First of all, they can commit to themselves that, hey, I've never done this. I'm going to take my son or daughter, or my grandson or daughter, or my niece or nephew, and we're going to go fishing next weekend. That's an internal commitment, but they can volunteer. We are opening chapters up all over the state of Texas, and we're rolling out now into other states. There's contributions that can be made, everything from as much as they want to give to just calling and saying, hey, we support you, and liking me on Facebook.
There you go, because that's how the buzz starts. And what you do is Fishing's Future, you also do other things. You've got, when I was looking at your website, I was like, wow, that's such a cool idea. You have kayaking camps, you have actually tournaments, and you have fishing camps too.
That's correct. We started with fishing camps. And if I take a little 6 or 7 year old and say, hey, we're going to go fishing, and the parents drop them off and I take them fishing and the child has some success, when they come back home, they're going to say, oh, man, I love this. This is so much fun. But if mommy or daddy doesn't know anything about it and they're not really accustomed to being out into nature, they're probably not going to get to go. So these camps that we've designed, we put them together where the parents are active participants. Every skill that a child learns, the parent learns right along with them. Of course, the parent learns it easier, so the parent in turn turns and helps their son or daughter learn, which is the bonding moment that puts them back into the learning environment with their child. Then we actually go fishing at the end of the day, and when they catch a fish, the parents are beaming with pride, as all parents do when their son or daughter catches their first fish. The kid's ecstatic because, you know, they've got something that's banging around on the end of the line. They don't want to touch it. They touch it. They take it off. They turn it loose back into the water. Everybody's happy, and chances are they go fishing. It just gives them another opportunity to get out and both feel safe and comfortable at doing something.
What have you found after 7 years? I got to imagine that you've seen something open up with the people that come to the fishing camp or go to the website, ask you questions, call up. And once you started this 7 years ago, now you're at this point where it's even growing more. And you're talking about opening it up in other states and other chapters and other events and all that kind of stuff. So obviously it's rolling along. But what personally, what have you seen that's really made you say, oh, I am so glad I did this?
Kate, I've had folks call me as I'm driving home from an event. And one particular that stands out, there was a doctor who, you know, was divorced, and he sees his son and daughter a couple of times throughout the month. They hunted a little bit, he and his son, but they really couldn't connect. You know, the child has an iPhone, which, you know, if you have an iPhone anymore, you're glued to it, and the Xbox 30 or 360s, et cetera. And the dad just didn't know, and he said, you know, I'm a surgeon. I make good money. I think it's my responsibility to work hard and provide them what they need. He brought his son to this camp, and his son, I think, was 8 or 9 at the time. The little boy caught a fish after the day was done, and he pulled the fish in. He dropped the pole. He turned, and he gave his dad a hug around the waist, and he looked at me and said, Daddy, this is the best day of my life. And the father said this on the phone. He said, I looked down into my son's eyes, and I saw something I'd never seen. I saw real joy. And he said, Shane, I want you to know that you are causing me to readjust my priorities in life.
Wow.
That, Kate, is you know, and that's just one that sticks out. But when we put parents and kids together in this kind of an environment, it changes lives. And it's the beginning of a new relationship from that day forward. And it just reinforces my commitment to it.
Yeah, because that's enforcing the fact that now these bonds are growing. And I don't know what it is. It's what I said right before we went to you, that you know, you give your kids, I see this all the time, get them bigger, badder things, you know, the best computer, the Nook, the iPod, the whatever it is. But it doesn't matter, Shane, and obviously you recognize this, all the material things you can give them, it really is time, isn't it? And you know, because you're on grandkids now, isn't it really time that they want?
It's time. It's time that they want. It's time that they need. And parents, as much as they love their children, and they love them just as much now as they did when we were growing up, but they, you know, they've been taken out of the basics, and I'm trying to reconnect them to those basics. When was the last time, Kate, you saw a little boy or a girl climb a tree? They don't do this. So
no.
We started with the kids' fish camps. We're rolling. You know, after you've been to a kids' fish camp, what's the next step? Well, the next step is to learn how to kayak and maybe go out in a kayak and fish, or go out in a canoe and canoe around a little pond with your dad or your mom or your grandfather. My grandfather got me started years and years and years ago, and by the time I was 7, I was hooked on fishing. I would come home from Sunday school every Sunday, and my granddad, I'd look out as we were driving up, and I'd see him sitting down at a little pond we had on our property, and I didn't even want to change clothes. And I ran down there and we fished, and he died when I was 7. And by that time, I knew that I wanted to give back what he gave me. And it's taken me a long time to do it, but that's what fishing's future is, and we're giving it back.
Yeah, good for you. Are you seeing that women are some women coming out too, or is it mostly dads and sons, or kind of a mixture?
Oh, no. Surprisingly, we probably have 56 to 60% of our participants are mothers with sons or mothers with daughters.
Wow.
It's very surprising the amount of women. That's one of the things that really surprised me. I thought, oh, this will be a male bonding thing. But no, it's what a blessing for women to get back out and say, hey, I want to do this. And once they know how to do it, boy, a woman will tackle about anything, especially if she's got a couple of kids that are pulling on her to do it.
Yeah, no kidding. And the kids, we should say this too, the kids can be ages, what, 6 to 13? That's primarily the group?
We target age 6 to 13. Research indicates that a child in between 9 and 11, if they get involved in the outdoors at that age, that's a very formidable age for them. And the statistics and research backs it up that they will be much more environmentally conscious as they grow older. And if we don't do something now, boy, they're, you know, we're going to be in a world hurt. So
yeah,
we've
no
targeted
kidding.
The 6 to 13-year-olds.
Yeah, no kidding. I think it's tremendous what you're doing, Shane. What a pleasure to learn about your story. I hope a lot of people listening here in America tonight take the time and go to fishingsfuture.org. Maybe you can help start a chapter in your own area. Wouldn't that be terrific? Shane, once again, we appreciate you and what you're doing, and thanks for joining us on ATN.
Okay, this has been a true honor. Thank you for what you do. I love you. You're fantastic. And, hey, go fishing sometime.
Absolutely. I want to catch a big one. Thanks, Shane.
Okay, bye-bye.
Before you throw away your used batteries, you need to listen to this. Now, going green can save money. Go green and save money by giving life to your used batteries by charging them with the Renaissance Charger. The Renaissance Charger uses a new revolutionary battery charging technology that effectively extends the life of new batteries and gives new life to used batteries. Invented by legendary audio genius John Bedini, this unique and patented charging system rejuvenates the electrochemical plate structure in the battery without additives, increasing capacity and maintaining cell integrity. Renaissance Charge offers a full line of products made in the USA for all types and sizes of batteries. Find out why our customers tell us the Renaissance Charger is the only battery charger they will ever use. Save your money. Save the environment. Visit us online at r-charge.com. That's r-charge.com, or call us at 208-772-4514. That's 208-772-4514. Be a part of the revolution today.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you, too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
There's a man named Dr. Wallach, who is anything but your typical doctor. Both a veterinarian and naturopathic physician, Doc asks, why does the United States spend more money on health care by far and still rank 50th in health and longevity worldwide? He believes that people should empower themselves with a basic understanding of nutrition, taking charge of their life, and attain optimal health and longevity through nutrition, not by toxic prescription drugs leading to side effects. This is clearly a deadly recipe. The good news is Doc Wallach's message is resonating with an increasing number of Americans who are waking up to all the big government and big pharma manipulation of our healthcare system. I like what Doc Wallach is saying and doing to enlighten people about healthcare and have joined forces to help this tireless crusader spread his message. Visit InfoWarsTeam.com and listen to Dr. Wallach's Deadly Recipes lecture. It makes a lot of sense, and I want you to join our InfoWars team. Go to InfoWarsTeam.com. That's InfoWarsTeam.com.
So the latest in the Charlie Sheen saga, which our own Alex Jones broke that story. He's friendly with Sheen, and as all of you know, called his show, his radio show, and that sort of started the whole ball rolling. Now everybody is climbing over themselves to get an interview with Charlie Sheen, and he's obliging. It's all a very strange thing on TMZ. That's one of those things you don't admit you watch, because I can't even stand it. But if it's like I said, if you're trapped in the couch, you're immobile, and that happens to come on after the little news block you've been watching, you are just captivated for that moment. And he did some crazy backyard interview. So this is a slice. I'm just going to give you a little slice of the latest from Charlie Sheen. Take a listen.
Well, you've thought about the goddesses. Come on, they're an international sensation. These are my girlfriends. These are the women that I love that have completed the three parts of my heart. Man, I was banging 7-gram rocks and finishing them because that's how I roll. I have one speed. I have one gear. Go. Well, I mean, wouldn't you? I don't have a job. I got a whole family to support and love. I'm here to collect, you know, and they're going to lose.
Yeah, there you go. And they're going to lose. Some of the stuff that he's saying is funny, and some of it you just feel badly for him because obviously a lot is going on there. Now, 2.5 Men what they're saying is it might, the future's uncertain. CBS is saying they just might shut the whole thing down. It's looking more and more that way. At least they're paying the crew for the four episodes they'll miss this season. Each and every Tuesday, we go out to Hollywood and talk to our pal Stephen Shohet, Hollywood Stories. Boy, he's always got the inside scoop. Stephen, Charlie Sheen has to be the talk of the town, I can imagine.
Yeah, he is being talked about quite a bit. You know, that show was really based on him. I mean, Chuck Lorre, the producer, back in 2003 when he was making Dharma and Greg, he just got into a conversation with one of the writers on the show. What if a degenerate's life was improved by being around a kid? And for some reason, the Charlie Sheen came to mind, and so he contacted Charlie Sheen about it, and Charlie Sheen loved the idea, had a great sense of humor, and that's how the show developed. So it's a unique situation. I mean, John Stamos, for example, has been talked about replacing Charlie Sheen. John Stamos cracked, there's no truth to me replacing Charlie Sheen on Two and a Half Men, but Martin Sheen wants me for his new son. So, it's really an interesting situation. I feel bad for the guy.
I can't help it, and
maybe I shouldn't. I don't know if he's anti-Semitic. I hope not. I know he's a 9/11 truther, and sometimes that leads some people down an anti-Semitic road. But I hope I have friends who have met him who said he was a really nice guy. If you watch bloopers of Two and a Half Men, when things go wrong and he laughs, he seems like a really nice guy. John Cryer says he's a really nice guy. Obviously, he was sort of pushed into getting into AA. He has spoken out for years that he's against AA. And so he was pushed into it. And then when he came back, no shows were written and they weren't ready to go, and it really set him off, and now at the very end here he seems to realize that maybe I shouldn't have aired all this laundry publicly, and maybe I should have chosen another way to respond. At least that's what he said in one of the interviews. It's hard to keep track of all of them.
Yeah, no kidding. That's what I was saying, is everybody is getting the interviews with him. I met him once. I've told this story, and he was very nice. He was smoking a billion cigarettes, which is his own choice, and he had a few drinks, but he was very friendly and nice. It was at an NBA All-Star game, and I agree with you. I feel for him, and we'll see how this all turns out in the end. I'm glad the crew gets their money for those four shows, as I mentioned, the four episodes. The Oscars, I'm going to switch gears on you. The Oscars wrap up. And the first thing I got to ask you is, because, boy, a lot of people reviewed the Oscars and completely bombed, said it bombed with Anne Hathaway and James Franco. What did you think?
I thought it was very bad. One thing is, it's so inside. I mean, like, it's very nice Christian Bale talking about Dickie Ward and giving him a shout out, but you know, one thing I think they need is to explain sort of what the movies are about and maybe some of the stories behind them a little bit. Like when you get a really good DVD, they have great interviews with the actors. They could lead in with little bits of information. I mean it's such an insider show. So also that was with the case with Anne Hathaway. Way when she did that little number teasing Hugh Jackman, which was referring to the Oscars 2 years ago where Hugh Jackman pulled her out of the crowd to do a dance number with
her.
Yes. But how are people going to know that? So I mean, there's so many great things about Hollywood. I mean, that's one reason why I wrote a book about Hollywood, trying to tell all these stories. And they hardly shared any bits of information. And I think if you don't have a comedian like Billy Crystal hosting the show, or Bob Hope, I think you need to celebrate the movies more. And they really didn't, hardly at all. In fact, normally they'll run the clips from the best pictures throughout the show. They didn't do that. The award that's my personal favorite, the Lifetime Achievement Award. When I was a kid, I used to love that. Like when Groucho Marx or Charlie Chaplin, they put the montage of their movies together and then they appeared on stage. They didn't even let the three guys speak. I mean, and having three guys, I think, is a little bit too much, but I mean, that's the moment for the crowd to take appreciation of these people who have really contributed to the industry. And, you know, it was just you blinked and you missed it. So, I think there were a lot of things. And obviously, James Franco looked like, I mean, I don't know if that's his approach or whatever, but he looked like he just didn't want to be there. So, you know, the whole thing was a misfire, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a misfire, too. I taped it, but then because of everybody really trashing it, I decided, well, I'm going to go back and look at parts of it. And I agree with you when Anne Hathaway did that musical number. It wouldn't make sense to anyone unless you really knew what was going on and watched the Oscars a lot. Like you said, a lot of inside stuff. And plus, not showing the pictures, not having more of the pictures. Remember when they did it the year they did it? Maybe it was last year or the year before that, when they had actors and actresses come out and talk about the people that were nominated?
Yeah, I found that. I remember that. I think it was 2 years ago. And
yes.
I found that a bit awkward, too, to be honest with you, when they had that one-on-one thing where one actor came out and talked to an older actor came out and talked to a younger actor or actress. And,
right.
I thought that was, I felt uncomfortable for that, That for me, I mean, personally, I mean, you know, there are different ideas and they're creative and, you know, you should try them. But I really think they need to let the audience in as to what's going on. I mean, the highlight of the show for me was Sandra Bullock. I mean, I thought she was, you know, witty and had a lot of your typical
yeah.
good sense of humor about the whole thing. And coming back. Yeah, and then, of course, the Kirk Douglas thing, I mean, that was, for me personally, hard to watch, although I did laugh about it a little bit after I thought about it the next day. I felt sorry for the actresses because he was,
kind of
making it about himself.
Right.
But he's
old Hollywood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Biggest surprise of the night.
I don't know. I guess James Franco coming out in a dress. and thinking that was going to be funny, you know. I mean, it's just like you know, Milton Berle Revisited. I mean, you know, I guess that was it. I don't think there was any surprises. I mean, I got two of them wrong. I went with Underdogs when I got the two best actress categories wrong. But,
right.
You know, but the people I didn't pick were the favorites: Natalie Portman and Melissa Leo. So
sure.
And then Melissa Leo. I don't know about that. I mean, I don't think she. It seemed kind of fraudulent to me what she was doing up there. I mean, like pretending she was shocked to win maybe I shouldn't say that, but it sucked,
you already did. You
yeah.
said it. You were being honest. The best
yeah,
acceptance. The best acceptance speech.
I really like Christian Bale's acceptance speech, but I like Colin Firth too. I mean,
yeah.
I thought everybody was, except for Melissa Leo, was pretty classy with her acceptance speech. And again, you know, it's too bad. The great story of David Seidler overcoming his stuttering and you know, reaching that point, that's a dream come true. That's a wonderful story. The writer of The King's Speech. And also that I wonder how many people knew that Christian Bale was playing Dickie Ward if they didn't see that movie, that he was
yeah.
shouting out to him and they had such a close relationship, apparently. There were good speeches. Just the show as a whole, it just was, very hard to watch.
So we only have a couple minutes left. Your vote for who do you think should host the Oscars next time around? I'm going with Jon Stewart.
Oh, I don't know. I have to think about it. I think Jon Stewart did it one time, didn't he?
And he was good. I thought he was pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they could do a lot of different people. I think the writing has to be better. I mean, I don't know if those were Bruce Valanche's jokes. But I think they need sharper writing and more content. And I think it's less about the host. But I'll have to, I have to think about it. But if Billy Crystal is willing to show up for that one scene, I mean, I don't know why
he'll
can't do the
it.
Whole thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. Excellent. Stephen Shohat, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, and the book is called Hollywood Stories, and the website's hollywoodstories.com.
So easy to remember. Thanks, Stephen.
If you own a septic system or if you're facing costly septic system replacement, this message is for you. When you want to stop paying for pump outs and avoid backups, when you've had enough of the foul odors and costly repairs, use BioSafe One Septic Solution. Now there's an easy-to-use, 100% guaranteed answer to all your septic system problems. BioSafe One Septic Solution. BioSafe One is patented and made specifically for all septic systems and made by the same team of scientists to help clean up the Exxon Valdez oil spill. BioSafe One decontaminates and removes sludge, stops costly pump outs and repairs, and removes septic system stench, all with a 100% success rate. See what gives BioSafe One Septic Solution the advantage over any other septic product at BioSafeOne.com. That's BioSafeOne.com. BioSafeOne.com. Or call toll-free 1-866-424-6663. That's 1-866-424-6663. BioSafe One, the guaranteed, bio-friendly, money-saving way to clean your septic system.
We all need to prepare ourselves. You might have the food, water, gold, and silver, but ask yourself, are you truly prepared? That's why you need to visit MaineMilitary.com. MaineMilitary.com carries everything you need. Gas masks, wool blankets, fire starter kits, high-capacity magazines, chemical suits, military surplus items, and much more. Do you own a firearm? MaineMilitary.com has a large selection of pistols and rifles suited for your needs. Are your local stores sold out of ammunition? Call or visit them today for prices on hard-to-find ammo and bulk ammo orders. You don't need to worry about having a military surplus store in your area because MaineMilitary.com is the only store you'll ever need, all from the comfort of your computer. Visit them online today at MaineMilitary.com. That's Maine, like the state, military.com. Or call them at 1-877-608-0179. That's 1-877-608-0179.
Who is Sam Andy? Sam Andy Foods is life insurance in a can. Life insurance you can eat. Sam Andy Foods has been serving loyal customers worldwide for over 50 years. Why so long? Simple. Sam Andy Foods have perfected the taste and quality of low-moisture foods. Foods that last 15 to 25 years. And that's made us an industry leader among families, sportsmen, outdoorsmen, churches, schools, people living in remote areas, U.S. troops in wartime, and many others. Sam Andy is America's leading supplier of over 100 high-quality, low-moisture products, and everything you need to survive in any emergency. Visit SamAndy.com today for your free full-color catalog and free trial subscription to the Survival Times newsletter. That's SamAndy.com. Just like it sounds, SamAndy.com. Or call toll-free 1-888-331-0358. Your one-stop shop for everything your family needs to prepare for any emergency. Sam Andy Foods. Life insurance in a can.
The excitement of March Madness is in the air as college basketball once again gets ready to hold its version of the playoffs. When did it begin and why are so many people glued to the results? That's next on Sports Shorts with me, the Sports Princess.
This Your Family Today tip is brought to you by Boost Kit Essentials Nutritionally Complete Drink, providing your picky eater with essential nutrition and great taste in one drink. Visit us at kitessentials.com. To make sure your kids eat healthy, follow the 5-a-day plan. Serve 3 servings of vegetables and 2 servings of fruit daily. Remember, a serving could just mean a piece of fruit or a half cup of veggies. If your kids are picky eaters, ask a nutritionist about other sources. For more tips like these, visit us at parenthood.com/yourfamilytoday.
It all started in 1939, the brainchild of Kansas basketball coach Fong Allen. The idea? A single elimination tourney made up of teams from the National Collegiate Athletic Association's Division I schools. There's only 2 ways for teams to get in, automatically by winning their conference or by being picked by the selection committee. Allen and a group of NCAA coaches started the tourney, but it was actually H.V. Porter, an Illinois basketball referee, who wrote that a little March Madness may contribute to my sanity, coining the phrase that's endured. Talk about insanity. People who might not even follow college hoop suddenly know the teams and players. Why? Millions will take part in the office pool, plunking down a few bucks for the chance to win it all by picking the championship teams. Speaking of winning, UCLA has done it 11 times, a record that might not ever be broken. This is the Sports Princess for Sports Shorts.
Yeah.
Continuing for a second down the path of sports shorts, some of these NFLers might have time to go to the club and dance back to the oldies because, let me tell you, a federal judge really laid down the hammer with a fierce blow. Boom! I mean, I'm telling you, he took a mallet to the NFL. This is the deal. U.S. District Court Judge David Doty overruled Special Master Stephen Burbank's recent ruling, if you remember, that the owners could use the $4 billion in tube money that they were stashing away as a potential work stoppage fund if the collective bargaining agreement expires on Thursday, if there was, you know, no collective bargaining agreement. So what the judge ruled essentially is the NFL violated the CBA and called for a separate hearing to assess the damages that have to be awarded to the players. After the ruling, the NFL had this to say. I'm going to read you just a little statement. This is from the NFL. As we have frequently said, our clubs are prepared for any contingency, this decision included. Today's ruling will have no effect on our efforts to negotiate a new balanced labor agreement. Okay? But the Players Association said this. The ruling means there is an irrefutable evidence that the owners had premeditated this plan to lock out players and fans for more than 2 years. The players want to play football. This is the only goal we are focused on. So the NFL has lost its grip. They've lost serious leverage in the negotiations because of the ruling. So does this help with a CBA, or does it make the two sides grow further apart because the billions in leverage was part of a lockout plan? That's what they had, money in the coffers. Hey, if we get screwed, we got this money. We got 2 years of money. That means they didn't act in good faith. That's the first thing I thought. As soon as I heard that, I thought, oh, man, that's wicked. These guys aren't stupid. Of course not. They had money under the mattress. They had money on the mattress. And so they were, yes, wanting not to have a work stoppage, but they had a contingency plan. Woo! Wow. Also, by the way, the union, the players' union, is saying that the NFL didn't secure the maximum revenue as they're supposed to do in 2009 and 2010 when they renegotiated their contracts, because that's what they have to do for however the length of the television contract is, with Fox, NBC, ESPN, CBS, and DirecTV, because they all carry some of the games. And that included the revised work stoppage plans. Interesting, isn't it? It's going to be, I think, a real challenge to get beyond this. So get ready for possibly a work stoppage, unless the owners truly, because they're hiding these costs, unless the owners just say, well, screw it. You know, now this is out here. Boom. We're just going to go beyond this, and we're going to figure out a way to come up with this agreement. The players have the upper hand. The players union has the upper hand at this point. And trust me, this is the biggest game going. This is the biggest game going in the U.S. You think of the fantasy football teams. You think of just people who are fans of teams. You think of the merchandise that has moved. I mean, so much hinges on the NFL. And if there is a big-time lockout, boy, they really run the risk of alienating some fans. I mean, yes, it's different than baseball. Remember, you're going to have scab players. Who are you going to get to play out there? Who's going to? I mean, no. Uh-oh. So the NFL can't use that cash that they stored away in the work stoppage. Woo! Matt, you and I were talking about this on a previous show. We're both big NFL fans. Can you imagine? I mean, the rippling effects. This is a big deal. This is a big deal that this was uncovered, that they weren't negotiating in good faith because they had money. They had money to bring to the table, so they, you know, they stored it away so they were going to be okay. Yes. Right. Oh, yeah. And this really forces the hand of the owner. So they either are going to, they're either going to come up with something or they're going to be, or they're just going to shut it down. I'm predicting they're going to shut it down for at least a short while.
So you're calling for their heads, huh?
I am. I think that they're, unless, listen, when you have their feet to the fire, maybe cooler heads prevail and they get on the phones, they start working the phones and say to each other, well, geez, do we really want to do this? We can't use this money now, so we're going to have to come up with something quick here. What do you suggest we do?
Well, it definitely levels the playing field a little bit.
It does. It does. They're in arbitration right now. They're trying to figure this out. And so this has really thrown a monkey wrench into the whole thing. Crazy. Yeah, it's interesting. I've said this before. We're watching whether or not the government's going to shut down, which now they're not because the House votes and they got a 2-week extension. You know the Senate's going to sign off on this on Wednesday. They're going to do it. So there's a 2-week reprieve. But with the NFL, I'm not so sure that that's going to happen, even if it's just a little bit of a lockout. I think that may happen because of the time, because of the time constraints. I think that might happen. We'll see. Because the owners really want the 18 games. The players don't want to do it. They're far apart on a few things. Remember, I always say that you can shoot me your thoughts at americatonight.net. And it's funny, I'm going to do this. We will at some point go to the official mailbag. But I got an interesting note here from Jake in Austin. He says, teachers, teachers, teachers. There have been songs written about them. There have been crushes in the past. We give our teachers apples, and sometimes we get more than we bargain for. In the end, Kate, what happens to education in this country with what we're seeing, not just in Wisconsin, but across the land? I said this at the top of the show. Lost in all of what's going on with the budget crunches in 30-plus states, I mean really almost all the states, is they're reaching to slice and dice, which you have to do to balance the budget. I mean, who's giving you money? California tried the IOUs and it didn't work out. So teachers are on the cut list. The classes are going to be bigger, the ratio to the teachers to some of the kids. It's a shame because we're not testing well already as it is. So what's the future? You know, who knows? If your kid's good at video gaming, you might want to keep them going in that direction. I'm just saying.
We did some Charlie Sheening, and we were fine. Yeah, we're just sheening our heads off.
Yeah. You want to get high?